Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. Chuck Bono, Julie Hayden, True Straight Up, brought to you by...
Brought to you by AmericaCitizenPress.com, excuse me, and Denver Cenogenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Hope everybody had a great Mother's Day. I did. And Chuck and Rev did a great job, got some nice candles and things, which is always kind of fun. We have coming up here, or getting him on the phone right now, Dr. Stephen Turley. The obsession with the Depp Heard trial continues, but he's an author and a commentator and has kind of an interesting take on it. And then we were talking, I was reading a thing today about the history of how it all came about with the Washington Post. You're crossing your line there. And one of the things that struck me is just how dastardly the Washington Post and the ACLU and Amber Heard were. I mean, talk about disinformation, right? It couldn't get more disinformation.
It just shows you how the Post is run, how the sausages are made sort of thing. ACLU, Washington Post, they're just really hideous groups of people. And it's all coming out. So I mean, whoever the bigger loser between the two of them is, the other loser is certainly ACLU. And then maybe the Washington Post, if you believe anything that's in Washington Post, at least I used to believe things in Washington Post. I no longer do.
Not anymore. But we've got with us Dr. Stephen Turley, author, commentator, has turleytalks.com. Hey, Stephen, thank you for your time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Right. You know, we've been saying Chuck has been obsessed. Chuck is a lawyer, and he's been obsessed with the Depp Heard trial, as are other lawyers I know. I have a lot of friends who are lawyers. They're like, I can't get any of my trials keep getting in the way of listening.
Listen to another trial.
To another trial.
So funny, because my daughter has been in the process of applying for law schools, and she finally committed the other day. So I'm going to have a lawyer in the family at some point as well. So.
And then you'll have to watch her, because they all watch on WebEx and stuff like that now, right? They're like, I was going to do depositions, but Amber Heard was on the stand.
As a general matter, I find very little interest in stories that don't have a bigger picture to them.
Right.
And therefore, I'm seldom interested in, let's say, weather events, hurricane hits. And, unless you believe that climate change is changing the world, it's okay, a hurricane hit. Okay, there's a tornado. It really doesn't have any long-term effect on things. And therefore, my fascination with this indicates to me there is some bigger picture to this. And I think it really is a culture clash. And although Johnny Depp has been a heartthrob for 30 years, has lots of female admirers, this is really the anti-Me Too trial, and it really does kind of a thing of the Washington Post, ACLU, all organizations we all love to hate, and for good reason. And so I think this really is an important cultural event, in addition to being unbelievably fascinating and
sorted.
And sorted, as you love it.
And you have a great column up at TurleyTalks.com. Why don't you talk to us about that? Because you and Chuck are kind of in agreement on that.
Yeah, well, I think what Chuck just said is right on. Actually, you really articulated it well. Now I know why I don't like necessarily the Weather Channel, I know why I am attracted to WWE wrestling. There is an overarching meta narrative there, So, yeah, but I think you're right. I find the nuance. I'm not a trained legal mind, obviously, like Chuck is, or like my daughter's about to be. So I don't know all the nuances of the trial per se. But what I do find so fascinating is precisely this larger narrative that it's pointing to, that more and more pundits are writing about, and even what they're writing about, actually, which is really the death of celebrity. I mean, that's actually pointing to even itself a larger, really epical narrative, which is really the death of the old secular modernist world. A lot of scholars, people don't recognize, but we have a lot of scholars writing about the rise of what's something called a post-secular age. And if you feel like the world is falling apart all around you half the time, you're not crazy. It's because it is. The world order is, you know, as scary and as freaky as it might be, the world order really is changing, and it's moving from a secularized modern age that characterized most of the 19th and 20th centuries, century of industrialism, globalism, sort of a one-size-fits-all political and economic system for all people, times, places. We're moving away from that kind of world to a more post-secular, post-modern age that's increasingly characterizing the 21st century. And that's why we're seeing the world map change the way it is. That's why we're seeing such political instability. That's why we're seeing the rise of world religions like never before. And the world is going through what scholars call a paradigm shift. And ironically, I think the Depp Heard trial is in its own humble way very indicative of that shift. So that's what I wrote. That's the overarching sort of theme of my article.
Well, and I think you talk about, and this is true, that it used to be, you know, you wanted to, actors and actresses, you know, were, and it was all contrived, certainly. They weren't angels. They weren't any different, really, I think, than they are today. But they were kind of held in high esteem. They worked hard at maintaining a good image. But, you know, like you point out, I think now you've got Will Smith going up and slapping, you know, the host of the Oscars live on TV, and then his wife does podcasts about it, and these people who keep lecturing us, right, are shown to be, I mean, you know, worse than any in-law that you could imagine. I mean, they're just horrible people for the most. Not that in-laws are horrible, but you know what I mean.
You got it.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. So, absolutely.
I always wondered what it'd be like to be a multimillionaire, tens of millionaires, be a heartthrob since I was age 19, to have adoration and everything else and going for you. And this trial tells you it's hell. Johnny Depp, Lisa, hell life. I mean,
That's the thing. We think it's heaven, and it turns out to be more like a crazy kind of Nordic Valhalla where you're in constant warfare with all these demons inside of you, and that's exactly it. You know, it's funny because, I mean, celebrity has changed, as we all know, just over the last few decades. So if you look at Walt Disney, old Walt Disney testimonies in Washington, D.C., not that he was a Hollywood celebrity, but he was part of that culture. He's very pro-American, very anti-communist. They all were, you know. Right. They were all. Jimmy Stewart was a lifelong Republican. They were all Ronald Reagan. They were all very stalwart, pro-America, pro-faith, family freedom, that kind of thing. But that was a very important part of the persona that was cultivated intentionally by the studio chiefs and the publicity agents. And like you said, there were certainly scandals, no question about that. We're all human, we're all flawed, but they were effectively managed by the PR team for the celebrity, and they had to do that because in the end, celebrities were famous not because, well, this is Christopher Lash, the cultural critic, who pointed this out in his work on narcissism. They were famous not because they had actually done anything particularly noteworthy. They didn't fight world. They weren't Winston Churchill, and they didn't save Christian civilization or against this Nazi paganism or something akin to that. They didn't save the Union back in, you know, 1865 or what have you. They are very talented, very wonderful artists, but that's about it. And what made them famous was modern technology and telecommunication that put these people's faces, very, very attractive, very beautiful faces, and their work in front of up to that point unparalleled amount of people, millions upon millions of people. And the end result was that they end up basically becoming famous for being famous, as is often referred to about the Kardashians. You know, their notoriety came from the fact that modern technology made them highly notable, right? That in the end, that's what their notoriety came from, the fact that technology made them notable for more people than any actor or actress could have previously achieved. So you had to really intentionally cultivate an image of mystique and almost paradisical like lives, so as to create a celebrity status that then paid wonderful dividends at the box office. And that's how Hollywood really functioned for several decades. That was celebrity was part of the business model. And we're all finding out, it's basically dead as we speak.
Exactly. And I think there are a number of reasons for that, too. I mean, in part because, you have all these, like Amber Heard is now more famous for this than she ever was as an actress.
Right.
And I think you also have, I mean, you go on TikTok. I mean, it's kind of like the music industry in a way. It's like everybody's making their own music, and somebody who's just sitting in their basement like us can suddenly become this TikTok star and is invited to the Met Gala. But that goes.
Which we need to go to.
Yeah, which we need. Our invitation got lost. But
that's right. But it's so true. It's actually, there's a term for it. It's called the network society. And so back in, and again, it's another indicator that we're moving into a different kind of world. So back in the day, if I wanted to make it into country music, you know, I had to do what every other aspiring country musician did, and I have to pick up and I'd travel to Nashville. Or if I want to make it into the gambling industry, I have to pick up and go out to Las Vegas. Or if I want to make it into finance, I have to pick up and go to Wall Street. It was a proximity-centered world, and it tended to be centered around mass industrialized urban areas. And that's, of course, where we got our big media, right? You were just talking about the Washington Post. Well, our big media are urban, industrialized, modernist media. New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, Chicago Tribune, on and on and on. Those days are over. If I wanna make it big in country music, I just need a guitar and a webcam. You know, if I wanna make it into the gambling industry, I just have to set up an online gambling system. If I wanna make it into finance, I can make it in finance anywhere in the world, because we're no longer related to each other by virtue of proximity. We're related to each other now by virtue of networks, particularly internet networks. And that's why the mainstream media is collapsing as we speak, because they no longer have a monopoly over the information. The information's been radically decentralized. It's digital. It's instantaneous. It's very much like the way email and texting and instant messaging replaced the post office. And right. The media can no longer dictate to us now what's legitimate news any more than the post office can dictate to us what's legitimate mail.
They're trying.
It's an astonishing thing happening.
That's what we have the ministry.
You were talking about before that these actors are not Winston Churchill in 1945, but they played Winston Churchill in 1945 in the movie.
They played one on TV. That's right.
Yeah. And it's human transference. You've watched this whole thing. It's believable it's Winston Churchill. You know, you go
you
the whole
thing. Oh, yeah.
Roll into that. And then all of a sudden you get off and you think, well, that's still in your brain that whoever it is, Anthony Hopkins is Winston Churchill. And
and
part of the reason that celebrity has died is because we don't have very many heroic roles anymore.
No.
Johnny Depp, when they said, well, you know, is this really going to hurt him that he was heavily an alcoholic and into cocaine? They went, no. What do you think he plays? He plays a pirate who is always drunk. That somebody says, you, Johnny Depp is a drunk. I know that. I watched Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, that's why it's all changing.
It's so true. It's more a biopic, right? You know, autobiographical. It's interesting you say that because back in the 1970s, Franco Zeffirelli did the Jesus of Nazareth film, that big, massive, epic film. They showed it on, you know, live TV Monday on Holy Week, Monday through Thursday, and then Friday was the three-hour climax, no commercials, no interruptions. It was, you know, again, we were still very much a Christian nation back then. Robert Powell, who played Jesus in that film, talks about that in some of his interviews. And he was living with his girlfriend at the time. And as he was beginning and preparing for the role, he proposed to her. And she said, why? Why are we getting married? He's like, look, if I'm going to be playing Jesus Christ, I got to get my life together. So there's this amazing, I love the way you put it, there was a continuity between the kind of character that you played and the kind of life that you played. His name escapes me, but the father from the Waltons, he went through the same thing. He was a big drinker and partier and everything, and then he got this role. He landed this role, and he recognized, all right, now I'm going to be in, for better or for worse, I'm going to be a role model for people, and I got to live better now.
Right.
We're living in an age now where your typical university prof who teaches ethics on Monday morning, you know how he's living on the weekends?
He doesn't
care, right? He doesn't care. It's just, let's talk about Plato and Aristotle. We don't believe in this stuff anymore.
Right.
But I got to, you know, it's part of the curriculum. So this is part of kind of the implosion of the modern world. It's falling apart. And the good news, I think, is that there is a new breeze blowing, as it were, of going back. It's called retraditionalization, and I don't know how many people saw, if you got to see The Northman yet. It's a very interesting movie because in many respects, you know, there's not a woke bone in the body of the film. It's pretty amazing, and it is. It's a film about ancient conceptions of honor and betrayal and rectitude and love and choice and fate and the interplay between the gods and humans and even animals and all that. It's an amazing mythical world that inspired great epics, and then of course that are the Christian faith that grounds our Western civilization provides an extraordinary solution for as well. So
they talked about in fiction, certainly in England in the 19th century, you had, and early 20th century, all these heroic English figures who were going out to the Antarctic and dying out there or doing whatever else they were doing in India. And they were very
explorers.
And they said that had a huge effect on how average Englishmen acted when they were addressing a real crisis. They didn't go, well, hell, I don't want to. They'd kind of go, oh, okay, I'm supposed to be Emerson. Yeah, that's it. I'll be brave. And they were.
Right.
They were, of course.
Yes.
Now we have.
We're all whiny, and we're all victims.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine taking a Viking warrior and putting him on a university campus, and they're going to go, "No, that's a micro trigger there with that ass jacket."
They're already the Guardian and some of these British papers are already talking about the white supremacy of the Northmen and all. It's already happening.
It is. Well, you know, there is one other piece of hope, too, and that's what I want to talk to you here in a second, too, about where are we going. But I was reading a thing today, and it was talking about the resurgence of Snapchat. Now, we have an 11-year-old, so he's on Snapchat, and he's mostly on it because you can put, like, dog faces on your head and stuff like that, right?
Right.
But what this was saying is there's been a resurgence there, and this the Gen Z, whoever they are, but
they invade Russia.
Yeah, they invade Russia. But they were saying that these people now, it's not all about followers. They're like, I'm sick of having trolls, and I put a comment out there and people I don't even know trash me, right? And all these trolls trash me. I just want an account that I can limit now to my friends. It's shifted. It used to be there was this massive push. I'll go, how many followers do you have? And there's now, and this whole sort of generation is turning away from that and saying, I don't want to deal with that. I just want to talk and have a conversation and share, you know, my baby pictures with my friends. So I think there is some hope, at least to me. I take that as a ray of hope, basically.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're right. No, it's definitely the volatility of the network society is starting to wane a bit as well. It's starting to find a nice norm. And yeah, inevitably we're going to be connected by networks. There's just no social networks and the like. We're doing it right now through the telecommunicative advances of our modern age. But yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of the social media culture ended up doing exactly what we saw with Depp and Heard. It actually revealed the world of the celebrity as very sordid and pathetic and ridiculous. And I mean this actually in empathetic ways. I mean, it's kind of sad to watch it. You know, they have the world. I mean, there was an article that I didn't read it. I just saw the headline, how Johnny Depp blew through $500 million. What kind of person does that? You know, how does somebody get $500 million and not even think about investing it? You know, I mean, that's just something's not right there. And it's very sad. And it's certainly not emulative. Now, certainly not like what we've done. Again, what we heard earlier, which is so perfect. It's certainly not the case of the movies of old, the literature, art, architecture, music and poetry that have inspired grandeur and acts of virtue. That's not what you're going to get. And I think young people are hungry for that. They're searching for that again. And that's why we're seeing the rise of classical education happening. There's only about 10 classical schools that focus on truth, goodness, and beauty in the great books and so forth in the 1990s. Today, there are over 500. They're exploding. So there's obviously an appetite for it.
Well, and people are homeschooling. Well, where do you...
Well, I used to watch European movies when I was a lot younger, and a lot of them would be Cinema Verite and Slice of Life, and I'd kind of go, I don't want a slice of life. I want something that's heroic or different or exciting. I don't want to see my life reflect on the screen. I live it. And so I think there's more of that today where people go, I want to see heroic figures. Okay, they're bullshit. I mean, I still want to see them.
Exactly. I'm assuming you're asking Julie, like, where are we going here with all this? And yeah, I do. I think I do think the celebrity was, as I flesh out in the article, was a kind of idol, a kind of, you know, god, a sort of, I wouldn't say a religion. I think the technical term is a functional equivalence to religion, that pop culture in general just filled the void left by historic religion in the midst of our secular age. It provided a sense of identity and meaning and the like. But I think what's happening is we're seeing it throughout the world. It's not just here in the States. We seem to be going back. We seem to be looking for more authenticity found in our history. I mean, even the left wing is going in this direction. I think in many respects, sort of the BLM movement is sort of a tribalized kind of retraditionalization that's trying to get back in touch with a lost past. We're seeing it certainly in Russia, where the rhetoric for why at least Eastern Ukraine should be sort of sucked back into that Russosphere is Putin is talking about going back to 1,000 years ago when Prince Vladimir was baptized in Crimea. And I mean, you're seeing it in India with the rise of the Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP. Mm-hmm. They're a Hindu nationalist party, the biggest Democrat party on the planet. Even China is arguing that they're reading more Confucius today than they are Marx. Everyone seems to be going back, and that's the post-secular age. A post-secular age is an age where we recover our nation's culture, customs, traditions. We start moving away from, laws like Roe v. Wade, for example, where that looks like it's going to get overturned because it made sense in the 70s, but it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense anymore in terms of the jurisprudence today. And it's a fascinating time. It really is. It's clearly a very disruptive time, but it is you mentioned Gen Z. We have stats out now that show Gen Z is the most, ironically, the most conservative and most religious generation we have on record, even more conservative religious than Gen X or millennials or the baby boomers when they were 18. So when you asked a baby boomer back, say, in the 50s, when they were 18, are you conservative? Only about 16, 17% would say they were. Today, it's 30%. It's an astonishing. Wow. Yeah, it's an astonishing joke. Now, that's still, you still got 70% saying, you know, they're left wing wackos. But that's
30%, that's okay.
Yeah, the 30% when you combine it with, when you compare it, I should say, with my generation, Gen X, or with the baby boomer generation, it's pretty astonishing because we were saying it, we were identifying as conservative only at about 20% at the age of 18.
And I think, you know, like I said, we have an 11-year-old and who's going into middle school next year, and it's just interesting watching him deal. And I think they are dealing with and seeing all these things pushed on them by these liberal adults, and they're having to deal with it. And I mean, he was playing a video game, and it was a shoot 'em up video game. And he goes, "Hey, I self-identify as an attack helicopter, and I just got you." And it's kind of like,
love it.
Yeah. So it's like at school he's dealing with, and he knows it's nonsense, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the Gen Z, and whoever comes after them, my son's age, I think they're going to be the most common sense, practical. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to be our hope, I think, because we forced this stuff down their throats, and their response is like, it's a joke, okay? We're not doing it. Yeah. So.
Yeah. They're being called, actually, one publication's calling them the Jordan Peterson generation, interestingly enough. Yeah.
All right. Well, Stephen, where can people be? I don't let you go. You've been wonderful. Where can people find out what you're doing and what you're writing?
Oh, thanks for that, Chuck and Julie. They can go to my website. It's Turley Talks, my last name, T-U-R-L-E-Y, Talks, like TEDTalks.com, or they could just punch me in Dr. Steve on YouTube. We're hitting almost 900,000 subs, so it's really exciting. Whoa,
wow. We were banned last year.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I know. I have to watch what I say.
Congratulations. Hey, thank you
Take
for
care.
Your time. You've been great. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Chuck and Julie. My pleasure.
Yep. There we go. Dr. Stephen Turley there. He is great. TurleyTalks.com. T-U-R-L-E-Y Talks.com. Well, you know, and one other thing too, because we want to talk about some developments. You're going to be shocked to know that there are more questions coming up about Chrissy Burton Brown, and we'll get to that in a second. But one thing I did want to say is, with this whole Johnny Depp Amber Heard thing, I was unaware, and you have been obsessed with it, but I was reading a column, great column in The Federalist today, talking about how the whole thing came to be. And it's more evil and dastardly than I even thought. I mean, I thought at the very least, I mean, I figured, okay, well, Amber Heard didn't write it. She had help, but it was her idea and she reached out and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, the Washington Post and the ACLU sort of on their own wanted to attack Trump and wanted to do something about how gender domestic violence, as opposed to what other kind of domestic violence is there. But at any rate, had increased under Trump. And so they came up with the idea first based on nothing. There was no factual basis. Well, exactly. Talk about disinformation. And so then they thought, okay, well, what can we get to do? And the ACLU is like, well, Amber Heard just gave us a bunch of money. Let's get her. And
let's make her ambassador.
And then, in the depositions, they keep calling it her ad. Not her op-ed, but her ad. And the Washington Post, rather than saying, well, do we have any evidence that Johnny Depp abused her? They're like, well, we won't. I mean, no one cared, right? So they wanted to do this op-ed to trash Trump, use Amber Heard. And
Amber Heard had a movie coming up, Aquaman.
Right.
And she wanted all the great publicity she get as a survivor of domestic violence. So they figured, okay, that'll slide in just perfectly. She got $5 million for that film.
Right. And the Washington Post got clicks. The ACLU got a bunch of money and donations. And the rest is history. And it all would have. But no one cared about what was going to happen to Johnny Depp, right?
Well,
no,
her adding would say, hey, can I put Johnny's name in there? Because that'll really get another name. You know, you got that non-disclosure. Well, what about that TRO I hooked up with my little buddies, and that was a real, he can mention that, but don't.
I mean, the whole thing, it was just, it wasn't as if she was a domestic violence victim, had this thing, survived it, and they were sympathetic and wanted to help get the word out. No, they wanted to trash Trump and kind of looked around and said, who can we use? And she's like, hey, I'm available. Yeah. And I got this movie come out and I'm gorgeous. And so boom, they did it. And, you know, it would have worked if Johnny Depp hadn't said, hello, excuse me, you ruined my career and my life. God, you know. And so it's, I mean, it's just atrocious.
She got 10
there.
$10 million for her Aquaman 2, which I was amazed that she could.
Well, even though that's like $1 million a minute.
Yeah.
This is from Charlene. Oh, she liked him. I like the way he talks about positive trends. Exactly. Jordan Peterson generation. I like that. Then Charlene is like, she's the ambassador for fake abuse. And then Sandra, I agree, Sandra. I think it's called pure evil. Well, that's a thing. And that's why we have to be, when did, I mean, there's such a thing as misinformation, right? That's information that's wrong. But they don't talk about that.
But the person doesn't know it. See,
this is disinformation.
Disinformation intentionally wrong. Right. The other one, you just don't. You don't care, but you don't know it's false.
Well, but disinformation is as he.
No, mis is without malice. Dis is with malice.
Well, what I believe is it's just a term they made up.
Well, of course, and it's all terms are terms well,
and
are made that's up.
And Glenn Greenwald had the great comment today where he's talking about where. So now all of a sudden we have these experts on disinformation. It's like, what does that even mean? Would that be maybe Clapper and all those intelligence guys who said the Hunter laptop was disinformation? Or they are experts? But I don't care about that, right? This Nina Jankowicz is eminently qualified in disinformation.
And it's like, neutral. You can see that on her
is there some degree that she got about disinformation? It's like, no. And then today, Weingarten, the head of the teachers union, is now pushing Facebook, of which apparently the teachers union owns a bunch of shares, ahead and block disinformation for the kids' sake. Excellent. I mean, they just make it up. And because I think they know that people don't like censorship. So they can't say we're going to censor you. So they say, but we have to stop disinformation for the children.
For the kids.
To keep you safe, right?
So you can't learn that the teachers don't care about
right,
you.
Yeah. It's we got to keep you safe. And they think people will go along. But I think it's an overreach and we can't for a second, I think, go ahead and go along with it. This is the FBI that are hauling people in regarding the January 6th. Charlene, she said an old clip of Amber Heard talking about her barrel racing days. Oh. She could be on Yellowstone or something. Probably not.
Yeah. Well, her father is very much a cowboy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you want to talk about then the latest controversy?
Which latest controversy?
All right. Which is the latest controversy? So I was, I got an email the other, me and like 8 million, no, a bunch of other people from Christy Burton Brown in the Colorado Republican Party inviting me for a mere, I was like $200. So I'm not going, but it was a luncheon, the May Capitol Club luncheon, and big headlines, Christy Burton Brown with Senate candidate Joe O'Day. And then underneath it had Ron Hanks was invited, but did not confirm. Right. And I'm like, I thought to myself, two things. I thought that's odd that Ron Hanks wouldn't confirm. You'd think he'd want to be there. And secondly, I thought that's also odd that she put that there.
No,
it just seemed kind of weird to me. Well, come to find out. And I think the Ron Hanks team are working on putting out a response today. This is my understanding. And Chuck, you have had some conversations about this, too. So Ron Hanks, as you know, was the overwhelming candidate selected at the Colorado Republican primary.
The only one.
The only one who had enough to get on the ballot. Joe O'Day did not go the assembly route. He petitioned on the ballot, but he has become clearly the conservative favorite.
Not the conservative favorite.
Well, the conservative establishment. I misspoke there. We had Ron Hanks. You had people like, just to set the stage, Dick Wadhams, all kinds of people freaking out, saying that the election deniers are taking over and the Republican Party is doomed and don't vote for them and I won't vote for them, et cetera, et cetera. So you got, that's what made me think, that's weird that Ron Hanks didn't confirm. And so from what I understand, Ron Hanks's campaign is saying, we don't have any record that we can find of us receiving an email or a phone call about that. Now, as I understand it, I'm not sure what Christy Burton Brown's response is, but I do know that the campaign is like, yeah, we didn't get it. Or if we did, we can't find it. No one noticed it. I think they don't want to say somebody's lying here. And I think everybody knows anything is possible, but they're saying we certainly didn't get it. But here's my thing. And Chuck, to me, this is Christy Burton Brown once again, like she did with the Tina Peters, when she said Tina Peters should resign and not run because of the.
She was neutral.
She
was neutral, but demanded that she resign.
Completely partisan hack, Jenna Griswold attack against her. She was neutral, but she should resign. And that would leave only Pam Anderson up there.
There you go.
I think this is her attempt again to put her finger on the scales, because it seems to me that if you're Christy Burton Brown I mean, before you put something like that out, you have to make, I think, every reasonable attempt to try to get hold of him. Now, I'm not sure if she did or didn't. All I know is from what I gather, the Ron Hanks people are saying, we didn't hear anything. We didn't get anything. And then and Ron Hanks is like, no one called me. So I think at the very least, before you put that out in an invitation, Ron Hanks was invited but didn't confirm, you make darn sure. But what I do know also is that the Ron Hanks people have called and said, look, we did not receive it. If there was a miscommunication, whatever, it's not for a month. It's not till May May 26th. I would love to be there. You know, and then she said, no.
And I said, you can come, but you can't talk.
You can come, but you can't talk because Joe O'Day wants to be the only one talking.
Oh, okay.
Well, of course he does. Yeah, no, of course he does. If I were Ron Hanks, I'd want to be the only one talking. I want to be the only one talking in this show.
When you invite someone to come on this program, you know, you send an email or something, they don't respond to you and you want them, well, you call them or you send them over. I mean, you know, you go, oh, well, that's it. I tried and they bamboozled at us and wouldn't let us on. Christy's just lying through her home educated law degree. I mean, she's just lying. It's just like she did. There was another Capitol Hill luncheon earlier. I think it was Capitol Hill. It was Heidi Ganahl and Christy Burton Brown. I didn't see one for Greg Lopez, though. Just amazing.
Well, yeah, maybe amazing. He didn't confirm. Well, that's the thing, I guess. And so even that's just go ahead. So I guess you guys may be reading stuff because in some of the Colorado political blogs and things like that, this had become quite the to do. And they, like I said, they were working on putting something out. So we may get somebody from the Ron Hanks campaign. He is busy in the final 2 days of the legislature. Right? He's like slam. But I just think one that. Let's just put it this way. I have questions about it, right? If the Ron Hanks campaign people are saying, we don't have a record of receiving it. Ron Hanks is apparently saying, I don't have anything on my voicemail. And you know, I'm at the legislature. You know, I have plenty of campaign people. None of them can find an email. And that's the kind of thing, that's kind of a big deal, right? That's the kind of thing that you think
well,
you would notice.
Well, you follow up on it if you're at all, and you wouldn't put it
In the email.
We invited him, but somehow he couldn't.
And that's just even say worst case scenario, or not worst case scenario, giving everybody the benefit of the doubt, right? Now that the Ron Hanks people say, hey, look, no, we want to come. We're happy to come. If you're Christy Burton Brown and you don't want to put your thumb on the scale, then you say, okay, fine, Ron, you can talk, right? And then you say to Joe O'Day says, well, I RSVP'd for, I mean, you know, and I just want to be the only one to talk. You say, I'm sorry, Joe, but this is a Republican
thing.
You see
her push me? Interpersonal violence.
Gender.
Interpersonal
gender.
Violence.
I was pretending you were Ron Hanks.
You're shoving me down. My head is there. I got the bruise here. Oh, God. Interpersonal violence, everybody. Now, and your witnesses.
But not
trial.
Interpersonal gender. Gender.
It's IPV.
It's hard to keep track. But anyway, back to my point, Chuck. And that is, now that the Ron Hanks people have said, look, we didn't find it. We want to come because the primary is June, right? Mm-hmm. June 28th. And when do the ballots go out?
Well, I think they're always sitting
soon, right? So, I mean, so if you're Ron Hanks and you want to wait till she said you can talk in June. Well, it's like, well, when is that? Is that after the primary? Is that right before the primary? Is it after people mail the ballots? And if you're Christy Burton Brown, you say, look, this is an important election and we have two candidates and she doesn't have to say this, but we all know these are two candidates with very different approaches. Let's put it that way.
Does Joe O'Day have an approach?
He wants to be senator.
Oh, okay.
And he wants to take all the establishment money.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, Joe O'Day, you can call if that's not your stance. But it does seem to, doesn't it seem to you that if you're Christy
Burton, if it is, that'd be good.
But yeah, if you're Christy Burton Brown, you don't say, well, Joe O'Day says he doesn't want Ron talking. Of course he doesn't want Ron talking. That's why you're the chairperson, because then you say, right, Ron, but it's a Republican Party event. If it were your own campaign appearance, you could say, hey, Ron can't talk. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a Republican Party event. People are going to be paying to go to it. And so if it doesn't matter what Joe O'Day wants, right? Why is he running the show at something like this? If Christy Burton Brown should be running the show and she should be saying Ron Hanks gets to talk. OK,
if I was Ron Hanks, I'd make this a huge deal. I'd come out against Christy Burton Brown and the establishment and claim they're rigging it and really go to town.
Oh, yeah. Well, this now here's some comments. This is from Charlene. Oh, my goodness. People start heckling and booing her. And then Sanderson agrees, Charlene. I get her emails regarding the Republican Party and now start questioning you. And then she said, no more watching Johnny Depp. No more Amber hurting me. Well, yeah, I mean, but that goes more to Chuck. What you one of the things you wanted to talk about, too, is the civil war within the Republican Party. And I mean, to me, that seems like a sneaky tactic that Christy Burton Brown is doing.
No, she's not the whole thing. You know, she says she's quote unquote neutral on whether we should have a Republican only primary, and she did everything in the world to make sure that we didn't succeed. She was about as neutral as Hitler during World War II.
Right.
And it's a joke. And she's turned into a joke. She's just an establishment hen. And Ron ought to go after her because, you know, he's got to mix things up. So,
but and real quick, back to the Depp Hurd stuff. This is from Karen. A pox on both their houses. Remember when Depp said it's time to bring back presidential assassinations? That's because Trump was in office. Can you imagine if a conservative said that now? Well, if a conservative said it, you'd already be banned. So you couldn't say it, Karen. No, it would never happen. But if you're a liberal and you want to say it, that's totally fine. But talk a little bit about, though, because I think this whole, the Ron Hanks thing and the Republican Party saying, oh, you didn't get our invitation, too bad. And no, Joe O'Day doesn't want you to talk, so we're not going to let you, even though it's a Republican event. And technically, Christy Burton Brown, I'm in charge, but I'm going to let Joe O'Day run the show. But you said this is happening in other states too. It's not just Colorado.
Almost every state, almost, maybe not Florida, but almost every other state. You've got the MAGA people, America First. They're big into election integrity and everything else. And the other side is we got to move on to 2024, and they're supported by Chambers of Commerce and Mitt Romney and the Lincoln Project. And
well, the Uniparty people.
Well, but it's more just local businesses. In Ohio, they had the big fight between the one Trump backed, which is J.D. Vance. And I forget, do you remember who the other, his opponent was? Well, anyway.
I never. It
was a huge, huge fight. And the Chamber of Commerce came all out against J.D. Vance. And they're saying, no, they came out against the so-called Don't Gay Bill, Don't Say Gay in Ohio. They said, no, we got to get the greatest talent we can here and the more transgender, that's better. I mean, the whole thing, and it's repeated itself in Pennsylvania, in Missouri, and wherever Trump endorses somebody, Karl Rove goes and finds an ex-girlfriend to accuse the person of groping them or pushing them, as it happened to me.
Another gender domestic violence kind
my
of thing.
My suit is looking better and better.
Well, it is a civil war, and I think you know, we've talked about this a lot on this show, and I know a lot of our listeners agree with this. And if you don't, feel free to put it out there, and we'll you know debate it with you. But there is this group of Republicans who want to remain in power because they want to remain in influence and they want to remain with the money. I mean, you look at the amount of money flowing around from consultants and donors and things like that, and they don't care if they lose. They would, in fact, they're happier if they lose because then nothing is their fault. And rather than get people in there, you know, so those are the people that you elect and they go to Washington and they do, you know, they vote with Mitch McConnell.
Here in Adams County, we've got a little cabal of lefties. So we're not rhinos. No, don't call us rhinos. That hurt. That's a triggering event. And they'll do everything to destroy Trump. And they're trying to take over the party in Adams County. If they do, it'll kill the Republican Party of Adams County. Their leader resigned the other day, but there's plenty more of them, including some people you know, Julie.
I don't know about that, but I do know that it is important for grassroots people to speak out and to stand up and speak out, because I think people want to get involved in politics now. And I think people... there are factions. Like if you listen to some of the things like Christy Burton Brown, if you just saw that invitation back to the Ron Hanks thing, you'd be like, huh, I wonder why Ron Hanks didn't RSVP. That seems rude even, doesn't it? Well, and then you dig into it and, you know, I mean, so it's important that you stand up, and I agree with you. I hope Ron Hanks kind of makes a big deal about this and says, again, you know, talk about putting your thumb on the scale. I mean, if it was a Joe O'Day event, or if you were a Joe O'Day donor or something like that, then that's one thing. But if you're the Republican Party and you're supposed to be neutral, and there's plenty of time, it's not like it's this afternoon, right? And I would say even if it's this afternoon, I mean, what the heck? I'm not sure what Joe O'Day has to say, but all these people go into a luncheon, you know, I'm sure there's time for squeeze Ron Hanks in there too, even if it were this afternoon, but it's not.
It's a month away. To hear him to speak, you know? And it is interesting. I mean, a perfect example of the divide in Colorado, it's up in Weld County. The Greeley Republican women are very much a MAGA First America, very conservative, just a great group. The opposite group is the Weld County women, who are very lefty, very much into not Trump, although they won't say it, very much into establishment people. And so you have two really competing women's groups, and depending on which one you belong to, you're either a lefty or
well, and here's from Charlene. Since Colorado has a gold standard of elections, if the Republicans lose, it's because of KBB. Since a red wave is sweeping the country, you know. Another thing, though, too, with that is when you look at the elections, I think this is interesting. This is coming out now, too. So 2000 Mules, which I haven't seen yet, but we're going to have to. It premiered. You could go see it live in the theaters last week. It's now, I think, on Rumble is running it, and there are plenty of links to it. I think you have to buy it still at this point. But they made like $1 million in 12 hours. Tucker Carlson, to his credit, had Catherine Engelbrecht from True the Vote on. But apparently, according to Dinesh D'Souza, she had to swear that she would not mention the movie. So why do you have these conservative organizations? This just drives me crazy. The more I read about this, you cannot deny that the ballot harvesting occurred. Okay, you can't deny it. There's plenty of pictures. And in fact, apparently now, I don't mean to keep going like this, the ballot harvesters are being told.
The beatings continue. I you know, I loved it so much, but it was great. It was great. But the beatings hit tongue, and no matter how much I outcried, they continued.
All right, stop. The ballot harvesters are now being told to leave their cell phones at home when they ballot harvest, right? They're not being told, but I mean, so any Republican or any, I mean, even if Fox weren't a conservative, why do they not want to talk about this? Because if they don't stop it, they're going to lose, right? And so why not say, why is Fox, I mean, you got to wonder about the clout of somebody somewhere that, and I'm sure Dinesh D'Souza is not lying about that, right? Sure. Was told, okay, she could do the interview and she could talk about the ballot harvesting a little bit, but not about the movie 2000 Mules, the documentary, which spells it out. Who is pulling those strings?
Well, the one who's telling her is Suzanne Scott, who's the head of programming. Who's telling Suzanne Scott is probably Paul Ryan and other board members. But Suzanne Scott is always one who's celebrating diversity days.
But when you talk about this disinformation, I go back to let people watch it. And if they have a response to it, if they say, oh, I don't believe it, I think it's like, that's fine. But why would you want to prevent people from watching it?
Because you don't want them to gain any credence.
No. Well, because people, which is not working. I told you last Friday when I Googled where to see it, right? I was looking for showtimes. On Google, only two stories came up about 2000 Mules, a documentary. Both of them were trashing the documentary, and everything else was about mules, like the animal in history, right? But when I went on DuckDuckGo, there were pages of it. So clearly.
That's all the exact same thing. And it went on today, and now they're pages on Google because Google said, we got caught.
Charlene, they have to keep us believing the elections are legitimate, or there goes our perception that we have a democracy. Right. Well, and again, Charlene, that's why, like this great Glenn Greenwald column, this whole disinformation, as Steve Turley said at the beginning, they're clearly losing, the corporate media is losing, I don't even want to say the narrative, they're just losing relevance. There's so many other avenues on the internet that they can't control, so they need to have big tech crack down, they need to put out this, and now we've got it codified, is that the right word? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's actually a government agency now that will start deciding
it's an inner office working group now,
right?
Downscaled it.
That's going to tell us what's information and what's disinformation and what you are or are not allowed to say. You know, you've got the teachers union pushing Facebook on disinformation. I mean, that's their plan. I don't think it's going to work. I think that so much of the stuff they put out, this disinformation, turns out to be true, and that's why. I know there have been some people saying, why is, you know, Truth Social taking so long? And it is because in the internet, you have to have a completely protected and safe platform, right? You put something on Amazon Cloud. I mean, really, how long do you think it is before the Amazon Cloud services start saying, like they did to Mike Lindell, you can't use credit cards on our site. You can't promote on our site. You can't have your website hosted on our site. Because I think that's all coming. The good news is there is also coming all of these other platforms that are willing to have free speech on there. And we'll see what Elon Musk does. That's pretty interesting, too.
Well, in order to be a free speech advocate, I would like to welcome anyone from the Women of Weld County to come on and explain why the belief that they're really just hiding conservatives, but really rhinos.
Anyone out there who's been called a rhino and thinks they're not, come on and make your case and we'll let you. And Charlene, we'll let you come on.
And tear them apart.
No. So we'll be the neutral host.
We're neutral. Let Kitchy Burton Brown. We're neutral. Yeah. I don't know if they're a communist front or not, but we're neutral.
Hey, we have Ron Hanks coming on Friday, after the session is over. On Wednesday, I think we will probably talk a little bit more about that because I just think it's important to get the truth out. But that's going to do it for us. Thank you to the guys at BBS, Steve Turley. Love all of you guys on Zoom. Remember, you can get this show any format, podcast, Rumble, whatever. Just go to chuckandjulie.com. There are links to everything. And we will see you all on Friday. Not Take Friday. Care. We'll see you on Friday, but we'll see you Wednesday.
Friday is already coming fast.
we'll see you on Wednesday.
Now for the beating, more beatings.
No.
Take me again.